Hello, everybody. Welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 109. I'm Cody Cooper. This is a show about Linux, obviously. We bring the goods every week. The guy who helps us bring most of the goods every week is, of course, door-to-door, Steve McLaughlin. How you doing, Door?
Pretty good. Pretty busy, but pretty good. Once again, I will say for the people playing at home, my preparedness for this show was just as bad as last week, maybe a hair better. It turned out today my wife had to drive a separate car. She had something she had to do. I had to leave just a touch late from work. Things popped up. Got home as soon as I got home and had to do kid stuff. And then, honey, can you put gas in my van and pick this up and pick that up? So, there's always next week.
Oh, yeah. No, those last-minute honeydew additions are always fun and great. But luckily, I threw quite a bit of things into the fray this week, so just wanted to bring out a lot of good stuff, and it's mostly stuff that you referenced anyway, so we'll have a good show, as always.
Yeah, and for everyone who cares, I have a Git Pocket account, is the name of it now, Git Pocket. Yeah. My RSS feed for the things I tag in there is publicly accessible. If you want access to it, just email me and ask. Cody has access to it. And then basically, when there's something on that feed that Cody thinks is cool, Cody drops it in the notes early. So then we both know it's something that we both want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything in that feed, not even close to everything in that feed makes it in the notes, or else we would have a 5.5-hour show. I think that's pretty safe to say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to hop into the basic. And I've titled this one, Bring on the Hate. Because I know when I say this, I'm going to have certain people jump up and down and shake their fist and say how stupid I am. But I ask for everyone out there to hear me out and then tell me if I'm stupid. Okay. I've had more than a couple of people ask me about, I want to start selling computers with Linux on them to help penetration and to get the word out there about Linux. Ultra fair. You know, it's a very good idea, very good thing, especially if the person cannot stop getting infected. That's, to me, one of the big kickers for this.
You bet.
Well, there's a couple things I know. And one of them I know is everybody constantly in this world screams about change. They need change, they want change, they demand change. And a huge majority of them, as soon as you actually present them with change, most of them then change their minds and they decide, well, I don't want that much change, or I want change only on my terms kind of thing. That's one reason. And the other reason for what I'm about to say is, yes, there is plenty of security vulnerabilities being patched on Linux. I'm no fool, but I will say this. Let's say I have a 4-year-old Linux, hasn't been patched for 4 years, and I go out gallivanting, quote-unquote, on the internet. What do you think the actual odds are that I'm actually going to come across an exploit geared, focused, or that my version of Linux is vulnerable to? My logic is very low odds. I think I would have better odds of picking the Super Bowl winner now, and we're only like 6 weeks in.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, probably much better, I'll say. So with that, my logic is to give that customer as painless of a time as possible, which includes not getting viruses and stuff, but also not having applications seemingly randomly break on them or seemingly randomly change on them. I think that's a really easy, quick way to get somebody calling you up, screaming at you because the application changed. So I say, if you are going to do this and give them computers, in Ubuntu or Debian derivatives, you would go into the /etc/apt/sources.list file and comment out every single line. What that basically is, it's basically turning all updates off on that computer. So they're not going to get critical updates. They're not going to get security updates. They're not going to get application updates. They're not going to get any updates whatsoever. Nor
or distro upgrades.
Right, or distro upgrades. Now, the downside is they're not going to be able to install applications via the package management system. So this was my quick answer to somebody. I can research it and find out what is the quote-unquote better way to do this. But the logic is, as a computer tech, then you can also offer them the plan of every quarter or every 6 months doing updates on their computer. And you're there, so if an update breaks something, you're then prepared to do something about it without the customer having to go through the hassle of a bootloader breaking or something else breaking. So I say, send in the hate mail, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And I'll say there is probably a quote-unquote better way to do this where it can allow them to still go install applications from the package management system. But how many new users do you think are going to actually comprehend how to use a package management system? You know, that's just my logic.
Well, I agree with everything you're saying, and you at least finding a solution for it now is good. Yeah, I mean, by all means, if you guys have a better solution for that, go out there. But your solution, your offering additional support over time is kind of twofold. Obviously, it's there to handhold them through any sort of problems they have, while at the same time, you're offering a service to them. And this is one of the things that Chris Berry really promotes, is that having those times throughout the year that you can sort of touch base with them, keeping you top of mind, to where, because you don't know what else they might want if they're not there in front of you to communicate it. So, for instance, one of the things he was talking about, and I think even Liam Tidwell mentioned this, was that they had a way to automatically notify people that they installed AV software with when it was coming up for expiration. Because it's just that, hey, remember me? I did this great job for you. Give me a call, that type of thing, you know? So, yeah, to be, and you know what? As far as people understanding package management systems, and be, you know, for instance, you know, going on to even something basic like the Ubuntu Software Center, I think 2 years ago it would be really, really foreign. But now that the mobile platform is more relevant and people are used to going to one place to getting all of their software, it's probably easily comprehensible for most people. But how to actually use it is going to be more difficult right off the bat. Being able to get people to, up to a certain level of understanding, especially if they're your customers, and then basically saying, hey, I'm here if you need me. But if it were me, and this is just like a quick spitball idea, let's say it's 2 times a year, or even 3 times a year, but if there's some sort of like emergency situation, you can give them like one free X amount minute consultation, and then from there charge for any sort of, charge a small fee if you need to do any incremental updates. For them, you know, go in if they want to do something specific like photo editing or video editing or whatever. But yeah, it's going to take this type of support, this type of customer service, this type of care if you're trying to implement something like this.
Right.
Definitely.
Now, the other option is to basically change their user permissions so they can't. I don't like that because at least in the default Mint Ubuntu universe, they will still get notified of pending updates. And then you'll get phone calls saying, well, I have 150 updates. Oh, shouldn't they be patched?
Right.
You know. Yeah. But I will research. I'm sure there's a better, quote-unquote, cleaner way to do it.
And to touch on a little bit what you said earlier, too, if there is some huge exploit, you know it's going to be patched a lot quicker on Linux than it would be for another OS. Because you have a lot more people concerned in the community realizing, hey, let's fix this, and then it just gets done quick.
Right. Yeah, and I'll just say Highlander in the chat over at podnuts.com/lounge said, wouldn't you have to give them root access so they can modify critical files? To which I say, huh? What? No, these people are customers. They don't get access to critical files. Hence, they're customers. I would never give them access to critical files.
No, because you don't know if their kids are going to get a hold of it and start to delete stuff to save space for whatever.
Right.
You know? So right. Yeah, you have to, sort of lock them down for their own protection to a certain extent. But, you know, as they become more knowledgeable, you know, you can start to say, okay, well now you have this capability as well, or don't even tell them, just do it and then show them how to maintain that part of their system.
Gotcha. Now I got a quick question for you, Cody.
Sure.
This first link, was that in the Git Pocket feed?
Let me bring it up for you.
I don't remember it.
No, I actually threw a couple in there that I investigated throughout the day, too.
Cool.
So, no, it wasn't.
Do you want to tell us about this one?
Yeah, you bet. I can't remember where I saw it today, but it was linked to quite a few different sites. System 76, basically, today. And, of course, they're the hardware manufacturer that mainly ships their systems with Ubuntu. They announced today and tweeted a picture of their all-in-one PC that they are, in fact, revealing tomorrow on the 24th of October, 2012. And this thing looks pretty slick. And I like to see... I mean, obviously, we've seen all-in-one PCs, you know, for years. I mean, the iMac is, you know, quite old. And then if you look at, you know, like Lenovo, HP, I think it even references like Acer's all-in-one PC, even in this article. But it looks slick, and it's going to take this sort of polish on the hardware and then throw it into the market to get people to kind of look at it, because... Some people might disagree with me, but if you're going to get a basic or a newer user, it has to be something eye-catching from a hardware perspective, because if you look in the industry, it's all about the eye candy as far as the hardware goes, okay? That's just the reality of it. It might be that it's more expensive or it's not as functional or you could save money. Yes, you could save money if you know how to build your own system, which most of these people don't. So think of it as a foot in the door type of thing. But also, I own a System 76 system, Tracy Holtz, Russ Winner, a few other guys that I met at OLF, and they have great customer service, great hardware, great support. They release specific software patches for Ubuntu to their customers, so they know customer service really well. And to see a company like this release a system like this is just another part of their product line. I think it's awesome. Because anything that we can do to sort of make an impact on the market now is just going to get that many more people in the near future.
Right.
So what do you think about this device, Dor?
Well, first off, I'll say the picture is taken at a very careful angle to not show thickness. Because it could be 4 inches thick at the max, or it could be a third of an inch at the max. It's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say aesthetically... I like it. It does, in just a little bit, almost look like a tablet sitting there because of the border is so pronounced.
Right.
I like having low desktop real estate needs, and mm-hmm. this is the kind of thing that can offer it. They do say specs will be out tomorrow, which will be Wednesday, so by the time this gets posted, specs will already be out. The only thing I don't understand about this article is, will it sport a touchscreen? That would be a tempting prop proposition. Will it retain a DVD drive? Let's hope. Why?
Yep.
I don't want a DVD drive at all.
You don't, Dor. You don't, and that's your fault for thinking from your perspective.
Well, I mean, this ain't the 90s.
It's not the 90s, but you know what? Let's look at this from another perspective. Like in another couple of years, we'll be saying, why would you run a hard drive with spinning disks, you idiots? We're almost that way now. I get that, yes, but the majority of people probably don't even know what an SSD is. And they're still used to using their physical spinning drives, much like people right now, they have to have their stuff on disk. You know, like I had a customer who every month backed up almost the exact same data onto a different DVD and put it in their Fire Safe and then destroyed the previous one. I mean, yeah, backup, whatever, but I was talking to him about potential laser burn and disk rot, and, you know, it's just... People are going to use what they want to out of comfort, not out of form or function or stability or security. It's all about comfort in the beginning. Okay. So if to still have the and here's another thing too. It's an all-in-one PC. So if people are going to be making the investment in this, who knows? It might be their very first computer in the home. It might be their only media device in the home. So it might need to play DVDs because it might be their only DVD player in the home. As silly as that sounds, it's a possibility. It's something they need to consider, and that's probably why they're hoping for it in this article.
Okay, well, you almost got me there, okay? I'll say the only reason to have a DVD drive is to rip DVDs. That's just me.
Yeah.
And my initial reaction is because in Linux, it's near unheard of to buy a box with a disc in it. And to me, that was always the logic back in the PC world. Why to have a CD-ROM? Well, so when you go to the store, you buy Microsoft Office, boom, 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 you can install it. So,
right.
I'll say I'm not anti-DVD per se, but I wouldn't come out and say, I hope it has one.
Right.
If it doesn't, I'll just tell the customer, here, you can buy this external one for a couple bucks.
Right. And if it's to have any sort of disk drive in it, it better be a DVD rather than just a regular CD-ROM, because that would be ridiculous at this point.
Yeah.
But you're right, though. As far as installing software on Linux right now, yeah, why would you purchase a physical media to do it? It's ridiculous. Everything's available online, or it should be. If it's not, then it's probably questionable. Right. But having it as an actual DVD drive to view DVDs, if it's also a burner, then, I mean, yeah, you're going to have a burner if it's going to be an all-in-one. If it's advertised as an all-in-one and someone goes, well, I can't burn DVDs with it, so I need to buy another device, well, why don't I just go with this HP instead? Right. So, yes, for functionality, to make it more accessible for the basic user in the home, I can see them including that.
Yeah, I will definitely go for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one that we're going to talk about here, I'm going to redo the title of it. The title of it is 10 Things to Do After Installing Ubuntu 12.10. No. 10 Things to Do If You Installed 12.10. Because I want to reiterate to people, there is no rush. There's no true reason to jump on this and do this now. If you want to put it on a secondary or a third computer to experiment, go right ahead. I can tell you there is nothing absolutely drop dead important that I can think of that a single home user, I would say, well, you have to have Ubuntu 12.10. With that said, I digress. It was just released. For you people who can't stop itching and scratching, here's what they say you should do. Number one is completely useless. Get up to speed. Shouldn't you already been doing that? Okay, I digress. Two, check for updates. Two, you don't have to do that. It does it for you. Three, installing media codecs. This might be the only thing in Ubuntu that I think actually separates it from Mint. More hate mail. Because Mint comes pre-installed with codecs to run and encode MP3, WMA, MOV, AVI, I mean, all these different things. Where Ubuntu doesn't have all of that installed. So you can come to this page on omgubuntu.uk, I believe. OMG. Mm-hmm. omgubuntu.co.uk. And you can click this link. This is the one thing I like about this site. They make it at least easy enough for the newest of the new users to just come here, click a link, and it will automatically start the process to install those codecs. Number four, add your online accounts. Okay. If you say so. I'm personally one to not do that unless I have a really, really good reason. Their Mi menu has changed a lot since 10.04. I'm not sure it offers to me the same exact benefits as before from what I've seen.
And to be using a service like that and seeing any sort of integrated interface at first, it seems a little weird. I mean, if you really want to do something like that, what I would suggest is try one of your, like maybe try Twitter, or just try one of them at first, see how you like it, and then go from there.
Yeah. And what this does is it dynamically links when you add accounts here with certain applications. So Twitter will be linked with Gwibber. Gwibber is a fair Twitter application. It ain't a fantastic application, but it's a fair application. It works. You can tweet from it, get tweets, get PMs, DMs, all that crap. And then if you do picture-related stuff, it will link it to Shotwell. So this really might be a decent convenience thing. Only you can tell if that's for you. Number five, this was something big that they were saying is a major important step, and that is integrating some web apps. I don't know. It could be something really beneficial. With the YouTube is one of the ones that I could see actually making access to stuff quicker. The services they offer are BBC, CNN, Yahoo News, Google News, Yandex News, which is a Russian news thing, Google Reader, Reddit, and News Blur. Those are just the news sites. There's email sites. So if you want to get a notification in your computer that you have a new Gmail, well, then you might want to do this too. Same thing with like LinkedIn, Tumblr, and the other ones. Number six is the one that right now people are screaming is important. And by people, I mean non-Ubuntu fanboys. Everybody else is screaming this is important, which is to go in and adjust your privacy settings. They're saying the default are a little bit too open for them. I can't tell you people what's the right way to go to it, but I will say at least open up the privacy settings and look at them. You have to make your own thing. Hardware drivers for extra support for closed source drivers for either Wi-Fi, sound, hardwired, video, or whatever, they've moved where that was. It used to be a separate application called additional hardware drivers, I believe. Now it's moved into the software sources application.
Yep.
So you got to open up software sources to add new drivers for hardware. But if you go there, the very last tab is called additional drivers. I encourage people try to live without them. Now, if it's a Wi-Fi driver, of course, go install it. But I ask you, if it's a video driver, try to live without it. See what your experience is. Give the open source drivers every chance they have before you just blindly go install these other drivers. See what your result is. Number eight to me is the important one, and the only reason I'm bringing this up. Disable or remove the shopping lens. I'm not telling people what to do, but I will tell you, if you are at all concerned about your anonymity or privacy, you probably want to remove this shopping lens from the base install. Period. If you want to know more about it, just Google search Ubuntu Amazon shopping lens, and you will find many people talking about it. I don't want to go into it too deep. Number nine, set up Ubuntu One. I actually encourage people to do this. I also encourage people, don't put extremely vital or delicate information on any cloud service like this. But if you want to back up some documents you made to like invite people to a Halloween party or something, use Ubuntu One to back this stuff up. Give it a shot. I find it to actually have became a fairly stable and reliable tool. I like it a lot. And number 10 is totally useless. Just meant they couldn't come up with 10 because number one wasn't one either. Number 10 is enjoy it. I think that's kind of a cop out.
Yeah. You got that right. And I'll agree with you, Dor. Ubuntu One is now a fairly good service, especially if you're testing out their music service at all, or you have the ability to now stream music from it. And I've been using it for a while. I actually don't pay for Dropbox anymore. I just pay for Ubuntu One. And I use it it's not my ultimate cloud solution. Like Dor's kind of alluding to, you need to diversify, try out a few different ones, see what works for you, but don't let that be the end all be all, because if it goes down, all your stuff is gone or trapped for however long it takes them to get back up. So, but yeah, as an integrated solution within Ubuntu, or just a separate solution if you're running a different OS or a different distro, yeah, give it a try. And I know we're talking a lot of Ubuntu stuff here, and I'm not a big Ubuntu fanboy. I run it every once in a while, but it's the quote-unquote gateway drug right now. It's the big flashy thing that's going to get more people to try Linux, and anything we can give them a taste of to get them on the platform, I think, is good for the community. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I did want to add one more link to the notes.
Okay.
Of course, I'm doing it in line, which of course is not cool. It is now Ubuntu One Cloud Storage Service comes to the Mac. So if you are what Nightwise calls a slider, i.e. you use multiple distros and you could care less what, I'm sorry, you use multiple operating systems. You don't care what operating system you do use. You just want to use one that works for your need right now. Then this will be a vital part if you do want to even try Ubuntu One. There was no Mac client. Now, literally today, there is an OS X client. I don't know what version number it is. For all I know, it's literally a beta. But if you're using Ubuntu One, you have a Mac, I highly encourage you to at least check it out, see if it is working. I can tell you, the interface I see is virtually the same interface I see in Linux, technically speaking. Linux and Unix, what Mac is based off of, is not all that different, so it wouldn't shock me if it works just as good or close to the Ubuntu version of this.
I would like to be optimistic and say, well, if they're going to release it on a platform, it should work, but you know as well as I do, some things have hiccups. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be a good experience for those people who want to try it. And if you guys haven't tried it yet, do give it a try, because it's becoming a more robust service for sure.
Right. Okay, the next one, I think I brought this application up. I don't talk about this application a lot, but I will say I'm a fan of it, and it is called Mumble. One of the things I constantly tell people about Mumble is it's super easy to use, and you can put it in a multitude of places, including iOS and Android devices. You can install a Mumble client and talk. Now, what Mumble is, think of it as unfettered Skype. What I mean by that is people are not sitting at a place where everybody's connection goes through and then they can listen to them, or allegedly listen to them. Mumble, you basically connect to a server of your choosing, and then other people join that same server, and then you can have one-on-one or conferences with multiple people. The quality of it is just fine. I will say I cannot remember the podcast that mentioned this week. But I'm sorry, it was that super craptastic show I can't stand, all about Android. Where the guy lied and said it uses the Speaks codec. It doesn't use the Speaks codec. It can use the Speaks codec. And in fact, I'm going to launch mine up right now to tell everybody what the default codec is, because I am not sure. When you go into the configuration settings, as long as you have advanced checked, you can change the settings, and right now you can see it's using the CELT codec, C-E-L-T. The CELT codec is the default codec, and it is widely accepted. And by widely accepted, I mean widely accepted, okay? If you go in and tweak that and lower your quality settings, then and only then does it go down to Speaks. That's when you can have lots of issues trying to communicate with multiple people on multiple platforms. If you leave it at the default, you will never have an issue on any of the platforms ever, period. Now, the question came up that I wanted to look at. Is it safe to use? I assumed, just because it wasn't Skype and it wasn't the low-hanging fruit, it was definitely safer. But apparently, there's definitely some settings you can change in your Murmur file, which is the server file. So I'm going to have to look at modifying at least openspeak.cc, which is the server that I'm a part of, so we can get this setting changed so we can be more privacy focused than the average install, I'll say. So it might matter which server you connect to, so you might want to vent the server that you're connecting to see if these privacy settings are done. And I will say, if anyone has any issues trying to get Mumble set up, launched, configured for the first time, two tips I'll give you. One, make sure your headphones, hearing, mic, and everything is plugged up before you start Mumble, number one. Number two, go to linuxbasics.com, linuxbasics.com. Lower right side, there is a link to a Mumble settings, or Mumble settings link that will show you in video form everything you need to do to get your Mumble set up and ready to roll.
Yeah, when I was reading this article earlier, I was thinking, as I'm reading, I'm like, wow, there can be some vulnerabilities. So being able to sort of lock it down and make sure that, you know, your information as far as, like, you know, your IP, which OS you're using, your location, obviously based on IP, is going to be valuable. Those people that are extra security conscious, but just the fact that it might be tracking and or communicating or distributing that information and easily found. Mm-hmm. It was a little shocking at first, but I'm like, well, of course it's possible, but yeah, if you really want to make it more secure, and I got to say, I've used Mumble for what, a year or two now, since I started contributing to some of the shows, and yeah, I used it on macOS 10, Android, and now Linux as well. So yeah, it's very, very cool, very stable, very, and it's not a resource hog like Skype might be on some systems. So it's very, very, very good program.
Yeah, I'll say, getting the initial setup is definitely the hardest part of using Mumble. Once you got it set up, few issues can come up. I will say the biggest advantage to me versus Skype, like you said, is the bandwidth usage and the resources that aren't needed. But at the same token, I see very, very, very little drops, like can happen on Skype. So that's one of the big pluses to me. And I say one of almost human beings' default instinctive actions is when they hear open source and then when they discover it means all the code is out there open, available for anyone to read. One thing we all have to remember, just because something is in fact deemed free software, just in fact something is deemed GPL software, just in fact something is deemed open source software, does not by default mean it is safer. It means it has the possibility to be safer. Because there are bad things that can happen with open source software, which is why I kind of encourage people, stick with the more popular things. The more popular something is, the more people that are looking at the source code, and the more likely it is indeed actually safe.
Actually safe, and, well, safer from a potential user standpoint, but you also, I mean, there are so many other benefits, one of which I always really, really like to sort of bring up to people is, you could say, well, And you've talked about this many times too, the sort of locking people in, and then, oh, you want this update feature? Well, how about in the 2014 version? It's on the way.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely agree. And I will say, there are big improvements, quote unquote, coming in Mumble. Teo mentioned Mumble 1.2.4, which you might actually be able to go right now and download the source code for. If you do, I definitely don't encourage you to do that on a production system. Okay. But when 1.2.4 becomes stable and it's in the package systems and you get an upgrade to, it's going to include a new codec called Opus, O-P-U-S, which I hear great things about, but I'm bunch, sorry. But I don't know. I don't know. But I can tell you one thing, if Roteo says he's waiting for it, I trust him to believe that's pretty good. You know, Roteo definitely knows his stuff.
He knows his audio Linux, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't question him when it comes to audio stuff. And if I do it, it's just to hear him get fired up. Okay, now I have a warning because I don't think I've ever done this before. This is a paid application in the Ubuntu Software Center. You can go out and you can get it on your own for money as well, but it is in the Ubuntu Software Center. And you got to pay for it. But if you need this kind of application and you desire the ease of use in a package management system, this is going to fill your need. Period. Okay. Once in a while, some people, maybe frequently, need the ability to send truly anonymous email. I took a little look at this. I don't really do a lot of research, people, but I did look at this, and I did not see anyone claiming that it was not anonymous or that it was not safe to use. So that's why I'm bringing it to the show. It's called Anomail, Anonmail.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Anonmail.
Yep. That sounds good.
A-N-O-N-M-A-I-L. And what this gives you the possibility to do is to basically send an email totally anonymously, or it looks like you could actually spoof it. Not that I'm advocating spoofing, but technically speaking, you could say, dLetterman at cbs.com, if you want. Or, you know, you could say pope at vatican.com. I don't know. But that's what it looks like you could do if you want. And I will say, some people, hypothetically, I'm going to throw a situation out there. You're at your job. You see something happening at your job that involves people that are a higher pay grade than you. And you want to make sure the people above them know what's going on. But you don't feel completely comfortable raising your hand publicly, in a sense, and saying what you saw. This might be the application that you need to do that kind of task. So I just wanted to let people know about it.
No, yeah, there are all sorts of uses for this. I mean, in legitimate ones, like the one you're talking about. But there's potentially some funny joke / nefarious uses for this too. But if you do have something that you want to write into and you don't want to be identified, this would be great. Did you already cover how much this costs, Thor? I don't remember.
No, I didn't.
Actually, I'll go check that here.
Well, it looks like $2.99, and it does say you can get it in 1204 or 1210.
Okay, so $3. That's not bad, especially for people who are buying it for a legitimate reason and need it. I mean, $3 is just not that much for a piece of software these days.
You read my mind to a T. If you need it, you need it. You need it. You need it. You're going to pay for it.
If you need it, you got $3.
Right. Absolutely.
Very cool.
Okay. And this next one, to be honest, I'm just bringing up because I don't know any place else to bring it up, but I think it's cool. And I will have to try to ask Mr. Captain Jonathan T. Nato here in a couple months, because I know he doesn't know right now. But one of the biggest, hugest failings about web browsing and accessibility to people who are blind or low vision is JavaScript. If some page is extremely JavaScript heavy, the screen readers do not have the ability to parse the pages. So there's two solutions here. Well, two resolutions, I'll say. That is, better screen readers come out that can parse these kind of JavaScript things, which might be hard to do, or people need to not use as much JavaScript, which is definitely possible to do. If you look at sources on your page and you run tools that can actually see what your browser is doing, some pages will load 30 plus different JavaScripts. I think the programmer needs to just settle down. That might be a little bit too many at one time. But there is a stable SDK released by Google called Dart, D-A-R-T. I think it actually stands for something, but I don't think so. Maybe it, sure, I'm going to say it stands for Daring and Repetitive Truncation. I don't know.
Let's get on the fly.
I'm just making it up. But it's a JavaScript alternative that I kept reading is much faster than JavaScript too. Now, the double-edged sword with that is it's faster. Doesn't that mean I can load more? Maybe it does. But either way, JavaScript, in my mind, is a quite old language, and if you listen to Steve Gibson, is a very dangerous language. And if Steve Gibson says something is very dangerous, then we know it at least has the possibility to be dangerous. So this might become something popular, this might become something big, and I will say, no doubt in my mind, by default, the Chrome and Chromium browser will be faster at reading these Dart pages than Firefox or Internet Explorer, at least in the beginning, if it becomes popular. But yeah, anytime an SDK is released, I don't care, but this one can maybe possibly kill JavaScript, so I care.
Definitely. And what you're talking about as far as, well, in the case of Jonathan's case, you know, he has to use some specific software to listen to or ingest this media at all, or to do any sort of reading with screen readers. And it's got to come to a point where, and I know that this is a goal that they're working toward, the Accessible Computing Foundation, but making not only accessible tools to sort of ingest this stuff, but to make it more accessible from the ground up. Where why not, if it's not going to be too difficult, to just make it accessible in the first place through a modern browser like Chrome? He can't use Chrome. He needs to use Firefox, right?
Right.
Right. Okay. So if we can find a different way, then from reading this article and watching the video earlier, I was kind of intrigued by this because I don't know, I've never used JavaScript before myself. I'm potentially going to learn some programming soon, but I would rather see it having be more accessible off the bat in the near future. I know that's something they're working toward. So yeah, this definitely looks cool.
Gotcha. And I will say, I'm going to ask for a link. I was just informed in live that a non-male, that's what I'm sticking with, will anonymize your email, but in the original header of the email, it will show your IP address. So if you send it from your desktop computer, technically speaking, someone could contact that ISP who owns that IP address and ask what address sent that. If that is the case, it sure in the heck ain't anonymous. In fact, it's anti-anonymous.
You know? So step one, access a proxy server. Step two, purchase a non-mail.
Well, I said this last week, and I hate to be burnt live on the show, but I'd much rather be burnt live on the show than have someone email me after the show or next week. So I got to thank Martin big time. Okay. If this is indeed not safe, I'm almost tempted to buy the app just so I can officially complain to Canonical about you're lying in your application. And I will say, it is absolutely possible, Teo, to send anonymous email. You need a third-party source that has IP addresses outside the U.S. that cannot be subpoenaed, and they have to immediately delete all records of any transaction. It's possible. It ain't easy. It's possible. And to have a application lie to you on especially a paid app, is not good. And no apology needed, Martin. I'd much rather tell people the truth than send them astray.
Might as well shoot our listeners straight, right, Dor?
Somebody has to, because there's too many shares out there that don't. Oh. Okay, this next one, man, dude, this could be good, this could be game-changing, this could be vital, this could be important to a lot of people, or it could be useless, and I don't know. But I will say it's on Ars Technica, am I right, Cody?
That's correct. Yeah. Boxy to offer cloud DVR service starting next month. And I gotta say, I'm excited about this because I cut the cord probably about 3 years ago. I no longer pay for cable. We got it this summer temporarily, but it's because I caved into my wife because she had to watch her True Blood every week, whatever. And I know, yeah, I'm sucking. but Boxy, of course, the company that makes the great Boxy Box, which is initially an odd looking device, but it's very, very functional. Red Dwarf owns one and brought it to OLF. We actually got to utilize it in the hotel room for a night, which was very cool. So very, very awesome interface on their hardware, their software. Of course, the software is available for use on other platforms. But to see them actually kind of throw themselves out there and offer a DVR service over the cloud is very, very interesting. And I think it's going to take sort of a recognizable name in this field to try something like this, to really make it sort of catch. And there are some skeptics if you read the comics as to how this exactly is going to work, what kind of quality a video it will produce. But I'm excited because I don't own a Boxy. I own a Roku, and I've used the Boxy software on my old MacBook. And I like them as a company, make great products. But now they're also talking about integrating this into their next-gen device. Did you read that door?
Yeah. Now, I will say, at OLF, I had preconceived notions of a Boxy. And I said, it is the stupidest shape. It is pointless. It's not stackable. I would never want one. Then I held one because I helped Red carry it up to the room because he was carrying other stuff. Mm-hmm. Dude, it is so tiny. It's almost irrelevant what shape it is. I will say that. I actually, after that night, considered the possibilities of having one of these in my house. Now, I thought I remember, and I think I'm obviously wrong, but I thought I remembered Boxy dropped support for Linux about 6-8 months ago. Where now, if people want Boxy, they can go get the old version, or they can go to XBMC, which Boxy is based off of. But so there's a lot of people in the Linux world that don't like Boxy, quote unquote. I'm still open for them to do something cool and to maybe welcome them into my house. I will say the one thing that almost confuses me, a DVR for online content for Vimeo, YouTube, Pandora, Netflix, and Vudu are the ones it looks like, if I'm reading this right.
Mm-hmm.
Most users will say, well, a DVR for this? I don't need that. I just stream it. Well, there's a couple people who do need this. One, people in low bandwidth areas that cannot stream high quality content. This could queue it, download it, and then you could watch it whenever you want. But two, I think maybe more importantly to some people out there is those services change their content. And what I mean by that is Vimeo and YouTube, I know, take stuff down. So if you can DVR it before they take it down, you can watch it. In fact, you have a local copy of it. You can send to Linux for the rest of us, and we can watch it too. And Netflix, almost blind to users, will all the time take content down and put content up on their streaming service. So with this, then you could queue it on your local box. And to me, the idea of queuing a paid service like Netflix can become a true sanity saver in your house. Because what if my kids want to watch something or my wife wants to watch something, but our internet is out? No problem. If I have this next generation Boxy box, I can go in there. I can download all the Eureka or Quantum Leap she wants and have it queued right there, ready to roll.
There you go.
Yeah. Which could be when it comes to Christmas, I can actually get what I want. Oh, stupid question. Did I tell you what I wanted for Christmas?
No, I haven't. I haven't heard what you wanted for Christmas, Dora.
I'm a very simple man. Very simple man.
I'm going to throw out a guess here and say that it involves bacon somehow.
Dude, I tip my hat to you, but no.
Okay, all right.
Not bacon. Okay. It's zombies.
Well, okay. All right.
Which should have been your second guess. It's a shirt with Christopher Walken, totally zombified, pieces falling off his face and stuff. And the shirt says, "The Walken Dead."
Okay.
And I just think that's genius. And it's zombies. And who doesn't like Christopher Walken? I mean, come on. He's hilarious.
He is.
Yeah, and I will say Highlander, that was my second choice for Christmas, and that is waffles.
There you go. Although, to sort of make my guess somewhat relevant, if you are being rushed by some zombies and if you have some bacon, if you toss it, they might be, get away with it, get distracted, perhaps. Because who knows? I mean, we need to do some zombie brains versus bacon testing. And when the dead rise back, when there's no more room in hell and the dead come back to Earth, we'll be able to conduct those experiments.
I know, but it matters who's running next to me. I might just trip them instead. I didn't mean to say that, by the way.
All we need to do is hold up at the Drury Inn and have Russ and Tracy bring their beer. And
exactly.
We'll be okay.
Well, and his dried salted peas.
That's right. And that bacon in a can. Because that lasts forever.
Jesus, why did you have to bring that up again? I just got it.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
We have to digress. Rat hole, yes. Successful. Okay. This next one, I'm not really sure how to even bring up or to even bring up because I don't know if it's going to be relevant in any shapewear form. But the first line of the article on TechCrunch, which I almost despise visiting TechCrunch, but the first line of the article makes me want to mention it. Okay. And it says, never give up, never surrender, is the pull quote from Galaxy Quest. And if you've never watched Galaxy Quest, what's wrong with you, okay? If you at all marginally like sci-fi, you need to watch it. If you like Star Trek or Star Wars, you should watch it. If you like making fun of people who like Star Trek or Star Wars, you need to watch it. It's just that kind of movie.
Tell me, Johnson, we're talking about you. You would love this film.
I did not call him out today. But I had a Tim and Tommy Ake earlier today, and I didn't want to ask him what I should take for it. I thought he'd be insulted. Okay, but Jolly Cloud. Jolly Cloud in the last 2.5 years or so have completely reinvented themselves at least 2 or 3 times. Jolly Cloud started out as a very super lightweight Linux distribution focused on having seamless integration with back then web services is what it was called. Mm-hmm. So you would literally click a link called Google Docs. A standalone window would pop up with a Google Docs login, unless you already logged in, displaying all your Google Docs. And so it wanted to give the users the impression these applications are actually installed on your local computer when you're actually taking advantage of cloud services. Push 3 iterations since then, I want to say, they offer a Chrome plugin where on any computer you can log in with your same credentials as you would in your Linux distro computer. You would log in with those same credentials via a Chrome web app on any computer, and you would get a very similar experience as you would on your desktop. They also offer a iOS and Android application. You log in with those same credentials, and you get the same type of experience. Well, now they've reinvented themselves again. They want to try to be a start page for cloud services. I don't want to say doubting. I'm interested, as Mike Wise would say. I'm interested to see how this goes. Because I find it very... Isn't the idea of start pages virtually dead?
I mean, some people still use
iGoogle. But, didn't they kill iGoogle?
My dad still uses the Yahoo page.
Oh, well, you know. But I'll say, one of the people they have at Jolly Cloud was first at NetVibes, which if you ever use NetVibes, it was definitely one of the more smoothly crafted start pages. So they're going to try to reinvent themselves as a cloud start page. I'm going to be interested to see it. I'm going to probably play with it, but I highly doubt I'm going to set it as my home page on my browser. I just had to let people know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see what they do with it, but correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they originally have their own OS, like Jolly OS? Wasn't it geared toward like netbooks? Am I wrong? Am I thinking of something else?
No, you're exactly right. Okay. And I forgot, you're right. It used to be called Jolly OS, and then it morphed into Jolly Cloud.
Right.
And it was still an OS and a Chrome plugin and the Android and the iOS, and now it's just Jolly Cloud. And I think instead of putting their main focus on Linux, their main focus is going to be the start page and their side focus is going to be Linux. Interesting. I'll just say interesting.
Yeah, it's always to see. I mean, obviously, as the market changes, or if you're a company and your main goal just isn't netting you the results that you want, you do have to kind of make these changes and say, okay, we're going to shift gears and try this instead. And I wish them the best of luck because I've had nothing but positive experiences with them. I actually think I installed their, I tried a bunch of weird stuff with a netbook a couple, 3 years ago, but I remember it being kind of clean. Oh, you know what? Jolly OS reminded me of some of those like custom Ubuntu spins where it was basically just like, it almost looked like the iPad iOS interface where it's just a bunch of kind of block links on the desktop and you just click them for, you know, the different applications or whatever. Yeah, I remember it being kind of slick, but it was a low end OS for netbooks. So yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, and just was that to honestly, I try to predict some of this stuff. I ain't even trying to predict this, you know, because I'm only going to be wrong.
I'm making a prediction that we will have a Jolly Cloud podcast by 2015.
Okay, people, if you want to collect, Cody Cooper at gmail.com.
There you go.
Okay, and I have to say, what would a Linux podcast be without a Raspberry Pi mentioned?
Woots.
I'll say lame.
And damn right.
Okay, this also goes out to Peter64, the man behind Kernel Panic Ogcast. Super nice guy. Friendly guy, helpful guy, and he, of course, speaks with the Australian accent that I'm not even going to try to impersonate tonight. I just don't think I can pull it off. But there's a Australian hosting company called EDIS, which is saying they will house your Raspberry Pi server for free in their colo. And a colo is a cooperative location thingy. Basically, think of it as a central place where these people will physically manage the server for you. Typically, the servers are, of course, 40 to 80 pound big square boxes that you put up there with 18 fans in them and two power supplies and 116 gigs of RAM and all this. They want to host your Raspberry Pi for free. So you have to send them your Raspberry Pi with a USB drive for storage. They will not accept a USB external hard drive, but a USB drive. You give it to them, they will plug it up and put it in their mini rack system completely for free and host it for you with a public-facing IP address. Now, I will say, within 24 to 48 hours, if you need a reboot, you might have to wait that long. So if something happens and your Pi locks up, you request them to reboot. They're not running from one end of the building to the other to pull the plug and put it back in. It's free. What do you want? Okay.
Right.
But if you want a publicly accessible IP address, not in the U.S., granted, Australia plays nice with the U.S., but it's not in the U.S., and do some real world testing on a web server that you legitimately own everything about it from soup to nuts, and you don't have to pay a dime for hosting for that, how can you go wrong?
And all of that for less than $50 plus shipping.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt in my mind shipping to Australia from where we're at ain't going to completely be cheap. Yeah.
No. Well, I mean, just like with any other shipping, if it's going to take a little while, it'll be cheaper. But yeah, I've shipped outside the U.S. before. It's not as ridiculous as some people think.
Right.
But still, yes, the initial investment to get something, to get the hosting for free. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I will say, what you need is a Raspberry Pi with Ethernet, which is every Raspberry Pi, USB stick, a USB power cable, not expensive, the ability to configure a static IP. Every Linux I know of will make that available one shape or form. A box to ship to Australia, and no quote unquote credit card required. So I just think this is cool. And I'll say the only way to maybe make this better is to go over to Cook Tech Inc. and get yourself a super fly solid case off of eBay.
Damn straight. Man, I cannot say enough about those cases. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, we mentioned it on past shows, it's just an amazing, heavy, well, not heavy, solid constructed case, not plastic. We're talking metal. If you have a Raspberry Pi, you're thinking about getting one, get one. And also, they're working on specific cases specifically for the revision 2 boards.
Right.
So it's not like you're sort of getting locked into using one style case and then you upgrade and then you can't use it. They're going to continue to offer boards for it as long as they are continuing to be successful with producing the board, producing the cases. So if you want to support them, look them up on eBay.
Oh, sorry. Not Australia. The Mac Geek corrects me because my dyslexia is pushing. It's Austria.
Oh, Austria. Oh, so okay.
It's Arnold Town, not Peter 64 Town.
Oh, well, then I'm definitely not doing it.
Why would you? And I'll say, free is a good deal, but to put it in retrospect, okay, one single 4U, which is 4-unit tower in a colo by this same company, is $129 a month, which is a fair deal. But if you want one rack, in euros, $1,200 a month. So you can save $1,200 a month if you just go and buy a Raspberry Pi for the task.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I didn't make Peter 64 like jump out of his lawnmower to try to get this done and just to find out it's in Austria. I feel bad. He's a nice guy.
Heard great things about him. Peter, I can't wait to meet you.
Well, you have to go to Southeast Linux Fest. So far, that's the only one he comes for.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be making the rounds in the next year or two, so we'll see.
Right. Now, this one I just wanted to talk about because possibilities are what drives Linux to be further developed, further tinkered with, dare I say.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, except for apparently one person I've ran into, swears by the Nexus 7 as being by far bang for the buck best tablet ever. Well, someone at Canonical has successfully loaded Ubuntu on a Nexus 7. And from what I can gather, this is not like a rooted VM environment. This looks like it's an actual real physical install. Which means there's no Android running at the same time, taking up processor cycles, memory, or anything else. Which should definitely help the overall performance on it. And they basically said, this makes a ideal reference device. Which, that's the whole point of the Nexus, is to be a reference device. But if they can actually make it one or two clickable for quote-unquote normal users to actually get full-blown Ubuntu on a Nexus 7.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's at all familiar, comfortable with Linux would be fairly okay with spending $200 or less for a Nexus 7, hooking up to a computer, hitting a couple buttons, and then having Linux on it. I mean, I mean the downside is you're not going to have the quote-unquote ease of use of Android, but you'll have the flexibility of Linux. So I just thought it was cool.
No, definitely cool. I mean, once again, it can be, you know, the first step into getting more of these distros on hand, saying, wouldn't it be cool if we also made like a tablet version? Or opening up more development to port these apps, quote unquote, after the fact to go on mobile devices. Because I have an extra Nexus lying around. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but I do, and I would love to throw this on there as a test. And there's another project that's trying to get Linux on Android as well.
Yeah, it's called Linux on tablets. I want to say.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was on blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
He's really one man trying to organize it, so there's only so much time and hardware and expertise he can devote to this. Dare I say, having a company with the financial backing of a multimillionaire should be able to make this happen reasonably quick.
You would think so, and with as relevant as these devices are becoming, if you can get any sort of foothold on that market, why not try to get in now?
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, I got a couple links actually in this next one. It's actually a total of four links. Okay, we're going to start with, this is a collection of links from one place. I'm going to harken back to 2, maybe 3 weeks ago. Without community, we wouldn't know nearly anything about any Linux. You know, we would barely know how to fix Windows if it wasn't for communities out there discovering, finding, and sharing information. Well, there's a single user over on the Solus OS forums where even if you're a forum hater, quote-unquote, you really need to find a way to at least periodically check out this guy's postings. And his name is Grani, or Grony. I think it's Grani. I'm going to guess. G-R-O-N-I. He is a senior member of the Solus OS forums, and he quite frequently posts things like these. Okay. Back to back to back, he did these links. The first one is a GNOME desktop user's guide. This is not the definitive, complete explanation of everything GNOME on the desktop. But this is a great user reference guide into a lot of the basics and a lot of understanding of what you need to do to get stuff done in using the GNOME interface. I encourage this for anyone who is either not feeling comfortable in GNOME, or you just want to know more about GNOME. You know, you were running KDE for weeks, well, now you're running GNOME. This will help ease that transition. The second one is a GNOME terminal manual. If you're really new to GNOME, you might not want to know about the terminal, I'll say. You might want to just get your feet wet about the desktop environment. So I would download this, but I would save it for later. The third one is the same one. It's the GNOME desktop user guide.
Oh, you double posted. Oh, no, no.
No, he double posted.
Oh, okay.
One is on 1019, 1032, and the other one's at 1042. So apparently there is a difference between the two. I do not know what they are.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'll have to look that over.
I think he packed both of them into one on this second link.
Oh, there you go.
I don't have time to truly check it out by now, or else I would. But the third link is to Grani's profile on the forums, to where if you go there, you can just say, show only his activity, or you can say just his forum postings. And from there, honestly, you just scroll through his postings and you will learn something absolutely in less than 10 minutes if you just download one of his things and take a look. The nicest way I can put it is he's the man.
And for some people who are not Door, we are readers, and having a reference on hand to either read as you go, or maybe study beforehand and then go implement what you learned, it never hurts. And if you haven't tried that, especially if you're trying a new OS like Solus OS or anything you can get a hold of as far as a document, especially created by a community member like this, it's going to set you off. I mean, just foot to the... Well, what am I trying to say? It's going to give you a much more of a head start than you would if you were to start tinkering around with by yourself. So.
Right. Yeah, and I'll just add one super quick thing. The best thing about Grani, is 99.999% of his postings are not Solus OS even focused. They're just Linux focused. So you don't have to be running Solus OS to go take a look at these and learn something from them. They truly are just focused towards Linux users. Mm-hmm. And dude, I just downloaded this desktop guide. It is 134 pages.
Nice.
Everything from configuring startup applications to custom configuring the mouse or touchpad, how to set the date on your device. Oh my Lord. How to add a new domain name server to your DNS listing. So if you have a share on your network, you can call it My Windows Box, and then every time you go in, you can just search for My Windows Box instead of having to know the IP address, man. Dude, this thing is ultra.
I'll definitely be putting it downloading it later and probably throwing it on my tablet. I have time on my breaks where I have to consume more reading material, so it'd be worthwhile for me to check it out.
Yeah, it's very, very good stuff.
Very cool. All right, well, that's the majority of the links that we had for the show, but I wanted to kind of throw this out to the audience. And I was thinking about this earlier, because as I was prepping for the show, usually on Tuesdays I watch my son all day here at the house while the wife's at work. And he's just now 15 months old. So he's still very, very young, okay? But he's fascinated with my phone, with my wife's phone. Obviously, you know, flashy lights, you know, kids, whatever, right? But I'm handing him the phone, and he's actually starting to kind of flip through the pages and navigate. Mm-hmm. And beginning to launch apps that I know that he's doing on purpose. And it's very fascinating to see that happen. So from a father's perspective, I want to ask you guys, are your kids using Linux, or are they using tech at all? I mean, I'm talking like little kids, probably like less than 10 years old. If they are, at what age did they start to develop an interest in it, and what did you do to help foster that? And I'm basically just asking for kind of advice here for me personally, but also to share these stories with the community and with our listeners. So if you guys want to throw email, the new email address is podcast@linuxtherestofus.com, correct, Dor?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Send them there. Just, if you have any stories, if you got your kids started on Linux, if your kids have never used Windows before and are Linux, you know, enthusiasts themselves, I would love to hear those stories. So throw them my way. We'll share as many of them as we can on the show. Obviously, because we have limited time, but I'll definitely hit you guys up personally and respond and get some ideas. Because what I want to do right now is, because I have a couple of laptops here, I'm actually going to throw an OS onto a laptop. Because whenever I'm on my laptop, he's always just like, I'm not going to smack these buttons. I got to get up there and see what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him his own laptop, but I want to give him some sort of an interface where he can just start to play with it and just start to learn. Because if you don't put technology in front of people, they're not going to learn it. So I want to get him started at a young age. So let me know if they are using it now, or if they did, maybe kind of what you did to help with that. I'd be really interested in hearing that. And if you have any suggestions for what distro you might put in front of a child. I mean, I know he's super young, and I know it's very, very ambitious for me to want to do this potentially, but let me know what you think. You can hit me up on Google+, or you can send an email into the show. Either way, I would love to hear your ideas and suggestions or stories based on your experiences on introducing Linux or open source to your children. I'd love to hear that.
Gotcha. Well, just a quick thing I'll throw out in reference to that is extremely young and extremely old people go extremely quickly towards a touch interface. We, as human beings, had to be trained. We put our hand down, we touch this semi-rounded piece of plastic, and it controls the thing over there on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
They just naturally grasp, touch, slide, tap. They just get it.
Yeah.
So I'll say, it's going to... My son, I've been trying to work with him slowly. All he remembers is stuff game-related.
Right.
I try to explain to him just basic things about using a calculator for school homework. Who would have thunk it? Maybe it will help you. I don't know. He almost has no interest in it. Almost zero interest in it, even though it can ease his burden of homework. All he cares about is games. So I was on a trek to try to find educational type games focused, and I didn't have enough time. But you almost can't push them too young, as long as you don't push them too hard. So you almost can't push them too young. So at least you're thinking ahead of the game, unlike me.
Yeah, well, at this point, I mean, I'm not really thinking about pushing him, but I just want to kind of slide it in front of him and see what happens.
Because,
man, right now, yeah, like what you're saying as far as them messing with stuff. Yeah, he's totally understanding like the functionality of the remote control right now. Like, I caught him the other day. He grabbed our big fat remote for our TV, mm-hmm. and I saw him pressing buttons like in order. He would press a button, he would look at the screen to see what it did. And then he would look back down, he would press another one and look at the screen to see what it did. And he's watching me as I'm playing games, and he's trying to grab the 360 controller and press certain things and see what happens. So yeah, he's already has a mentality of, I'm going to make this work somehow. I know this works with that. Let's just find out how it works. So it's very, very cool and fascinating.
Yeah, it's like a young MacGyver in training.
There you go, yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, we did get a bunch of emails this past week. I have a few I have selected to read. We have yet to get the voicemail functionality switched over yet, 100%, but that will be coming soon. So for those of you sending voicemails in, know that we're not just backlogged and we're not going to get to them. We're going to get to them as soon as we have the functionality in place, which is coming very soon. So keep sending those in. Let's see here. Okay, so Joel writes, Hi, Dor. Thanks for the great podcast. I stumbled across this just now and heard your voice in my head go, self high five during the last podcast. I can only imagine your wife's face when you did this. Mm-hmm. Cheers, Joel.
Thank you, Joel. Yeah. If I wouldn't have got like a punch in the face for taking a picture of her face, I would have had a picture of her face. But I don't think she would have been cool with that.
And I gotta say, I'll actually post this link in the chat. Joel also sent this animated GIF of a guy sitting on a couch giving himself a self high five, mm-hmm. which is awesome.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was just like, dude, you get a lot of cred just for finding that and sharing it.
Right, definitely. Okay. Oh,
and I'll say, my day is made. I gotta quickly interrupt. My day is made. I just got an email.
Oh.
Swisher Sweet Cigar has subscribed to me on YouTube.
Well, congratulations.
Oy vey.
Well, they did hit me up personally and asked if I thought it would be appropriate. And I said, well, you know, just give it a try. I mean, the guy's busy, but, you know, you being a company, I mean, you might have a chance. So,
have you ever taken them? They're horrible.
No. No, I haven't. No, I pretty much just stick to the alcohol.
Yep. I understand.
As per my genetics enable me to. Rob writes, great segue, right? Mm-hmm. Rob writes, been listening for a few months now and loving the show more each time. Just want to say thanks to all involved with the podcast. Glad I am not alone with my annoyance with Mint. Ooh, he's annoyed with Mint. I fix Windows PCs all day. They pay the bills, but would love more to use Linux. Your comment about Solus rings many bells with me. Linux is as different as a Mac, and many, many people who are hacked off with Windows are not prepared to do some work and get a better PC experience. Some are, and I am more than happy to help. Have ran Red Hat and Mandrake some years back and went full-time with Linux back in Crunchbang 9.04 on my desktop, which was an AMD 2200+, and Vector 6.0 on my laptop and 1 GHz P3. The desktop now runs Manjaro very well, and the laptop puppy wary. Keep up the good work, guys. Yours is truly a podcast that anyone interested in Linux will enjoy, from the curious to old-timers, and get a lot out of it. Regards, Rob.
Yeah, and I'll say, if you use Manjaro, stick with Manjaro, but I gotta say, the tagline for Manjaro, which I never heard of this distro before, is enjoy this simplicity. That directly, quote unquote, rings my bell. That's what mm-hmm. I want out of a Linux distribution. I don't want whiz bang, crazy this, crazy that. I want simplicity. And I will say, I believe the default desktop on it is a desktop called Razer QT, which uses the QT framework, which is what KDE also uses in the background, but it's geared to be a super trim, light desktop. So, I will say they did have an update September 21st, 2012, up to version 0.8.1. I am going to download this and at least load it in a VM. It looks like all I'm seeing is XFCE versions.
Yeah, I was about to say, I thought that it was an XFCE-based distro, because I've been researching XFCE distros recently. I read great things about Manjaro, And what was the other one? Oh, Voyager Linux, which, and I was talking with Jeff Owens about this just yesterday, I think. If I remember correctly, Voyager comes with somewhat of like a Conky interface installed right off the bat. So,
well,
yeah, to have something super lightweight with that kind of functionality right off the bat, I mean, I'm gonna throw it on a laptop and give it a try.
Very cool. I will say, if you go back to the 0.8.0 release that was last updated August 20th of this year, so almost 2 months ago, they do have GNOME editions, unnamed branded editions. I don't know what that means. KDE and XFCE editions. The KDE edition might be a Razer QT, but it might not either. So at least there are some choices if you go back just a little bit. I'm no XFCD hater, I'll say that, so I might check this one out. If you check out that Voyager Linux, I will be very interested to hear about that, just because you said Conky.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't remember if it was Conky, like, I mean, if it was Conky, but it had a lot of the, well, from the screenshots I saw, it reminded me of Conky. There were at least some widgets letting you look at the performance of your system.
Well, that's good.
Like that, so, but no, yeah. I'll commit to having a mini review of it two shows from now, 100%. Hopefully by next week, but we'll see what happens. I'm doing a lot of distro hopping lately. I got so much stuff I want to bring you guys, but I need to get my opinions in a more concise form rather than just ramble on for 20 minutes. So,
I always ramble on. What are you talking about?
But people would pay to listen to you ramble on. Me, I'm not so sure.
I don't know that, but I will say, looking at Voyager, using your friend and my friend distrowatch.com, if you don't know what that is, got just actually don't know.
DistroWatch.
It is a Debian based distribution using Zubuntu, sometimes it says. So it's like a hybrid Debian Zubuntu interface, which I'm not against at all. In fact, I definitely think both of these, Manjaro and Voyager, seem definitely worth I don't want to say the time to research, because that really makes it sound job-like. I definitely think they're both worth playing around with.
There you go. Well, maybe we could do we'll get something in the works for you guys, because, yeah, I would love to kind of hash out on some lightweight distros on a show soon.
I'm sorry, I just got a kink in my neck. I'm a little twitchy. Okay. Manjaro is based off of Arch.
Ooh,
from nice. Germany and France.
Yeah,
there's Voyager, a weird combination if I ever heard one.
Yeah, Voyager's from France too, so
I know, but I'll just say Germany, France, to me that's a unique combination there.
Yeah, maybe some sauerkraut on your souffle. I don't know. Don't knock until you try it. Man, speaking of sauerkraut, I know you guys are sick and tired of hearing about OLF, but man, I tried some of those sauerkraut balls.
Yeah.
At Barley's. Oh my god, those are nuts. If you guys are going to go to OLF next year for any other reason, make it for the sauerkraut balls at Barley's. I'll totally give you one out of the six that comes in the basket that I will buy every day I'm there.
Yeah, and I'll just throw out there, I am not a kraut fan. Not a sauerkraut fan.
Me either.
Dude, they were good.
They were so good with that peppercorn dipping sauce. Man, that's crazy. Yeah. Man, and if you don't have your mind open to weird food combos, if you say you don't like something and then someone presents it to you in a different way, give it a try. Worst case scenario, you still don't like it.
Right.
Okay. I got one last email for you guys, and I got a shout out I got to do to someone. Nightwise, in fact, wrote in. Nightwise writes, "Hey guys, in Linux, the rest of us, you talked about making PDFs in Linux. In Ubuntu, you can add a PDF printer to your default printers. This way, you can make a PDF from any application in Linux that has a print dialog box." Then he gives us a Lifehacker link, which I will post in the chat. And yeah, I saw this come up once. I think it was when I was getting ready to print my tax forms or something that work sent me. But yeah, I went to go print it, and one of the default printers was a PDF printer. I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I never ran into that before. So no, he's totally right, and that has some legit uses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you can. I mean, there's got to be a way you can add that functionality to other distros, I would think, don't you?
Yeah. I know one way to do it is if you install CUPS, which is a printer service and can have printer drivers. It's really designed for CUPS, Common Unix Printing. solution. I don't know. But what really is for is to, if you install it on your computer, any other computer on your network, it's very easy for them to discover your printer and very easy for you to set permissions to that printer. But at the same token, you can easily in CUPS say, create a PDF printer too. It's literally well, maybe not snap the fingers, it's a click of the mouse, but you get my point, to where you can easily integrate that into any Linux operating system.
Very cool.
And yeah,
well, thank you for writing in about that, Nightwise.
But that's the same exact reason I found that you said, Cody, taxes, mm-hmm. 2 years ago with my wife, because taxes give me a rash. I can't do them, so I got to ask the wife very nicely, too.
Dude, every year, I have a guy I've been going to. I don't even live in that town anymore, but he's a family friend. I've been going to him for probably at least 10 years, if not 12, 15 years now. But I just go, Terry... It's anyway. He contacts me. He's like, "Is it time?" I go, "It's time." Like, come on down. I pay to do it every year because I don't even have super complicated stuff. But man, I hate doing stuff like that.
Exactly.
So many other things I could be doing. Even if it's just sitting down doing nothing, I'd rather do that than taxes and paperwork and calculations. That's it. He's a professional. That's what he gets paid for. Why not pay him to do it?
Just exactly.
Get out of my face.
Yes.
Ugh. Yeah. All right, so that was the majority of the emails. I did want to give a shout out to Bill Husk Jr. on Google+. He posted, dude, this guy, if you have not seen this desk, I'll try to find a link to it real quick. If not, I'll throw it somewhere soon. Built his own 8-foot desk. Let me see here. He built an 8-foot desk, and on Google+, definitely follow him because he goes, he has a step-by-step how he did it. So, like, he has photos of the lumber probably from, I don't know, 3 months ago and showing the progress on how he built this desk, and it is just kick butt. It's basically, and he even went so far as to stain and treat the wood and put, like, a protective coating on it. But half, a third of the desk is a gaming rig set up specifically for racing simulators. Like, he has the pedal function on the floor, but the steering wheel actually mounted to the desk with the gear shift, and then the LCD that's dedicated to it, and then the other two-thirds is an actual sort of, you know, just regular desk work area. But the reason I wanted to say this is because if you're thinking about building your own desk, Dor and your father-in-law just built one, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if I did, stuff would have already fallen off it by now.
Yeah, okay, well. Back before Dor and built his, I actually bought a solid core 8-core Dor. A solid core, there isn't an 8-core processor in the Dor. A solid core 8-foot Dor to make my own desk. And due to my lack of tools and lack of skills, it's literally just been sitting in my garage. Because the one thing that I've been toiling with is, what do I use for the legs? I still don't know if I want to make it a standing desk or a regular sitting desk. But Bill came up with an awesome way to make your own legs that are super stable. So go follow him on Google+ and check out how he built this desk, because, I mean, it's just awesome. He actually cut the wood himself, but I'm sure that you could have the wood cut to these specs or similar specs at Home Depot or wherever you're buying your lumber and just build it yourself. Because seeing this kind of work, it just because of him, I now have a great way to build my new desk and get my new podcasting rig set up. So thank you, Bill Husk Jr. Go check him out on Google+.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm always intrigued by these kind of things. And yeah, the Kevin Wisher, I want to give credit to in the chat, said, this is Monster B. He was at OLF too. He wasn't around, let's say, as much as possible, but he was there. And that's what was important.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's definitely cool.
Very cool. Well, Dor, do we have anything? Do you have anything additional for the people? Where can we find you? What else you got for us?
I'm drained. I'm done. I don't have anything else. If you want to follow me, know more about me, know all the podcasts that I do, because I literally do. Yes, I did say do on purpose. A lot of different podcasts, go to door2doorgeek.com. And I just want to remind people out there, don't forget to support those who support you. I don't want people to get comfortable, and let's say, in a routine of just digesting without ever giving back. Support whatever supports you, period.
It's a good message. I got to say, personally, I've made donations to podcasts over the years, helped buy their products. You know, I bought a lot of the PodNut stuff myself. And then along those lines, what I would suggest is, if you haven't already, check out the Accessible Computing Foundation, or you can check out the ACF.co. Of course, Jonathan Ado is trying to increase awareness of accessibility. And you can sign up, you can make a one-time donation or sign up for sort of a subscription-style service. I think the increments are like $2, $5, $10, $20, and $50 a month. But I mean, $2 a month, it's going to go a long way to help him and the foundation spread their message. So if you at all have, if you haven't heard of him, look him up. He has, is it still what, Frostbite Media, or is it now Frostcast Door?
The easiest way to go is theacf.co. Frostbitemedia.org is not seeing as much activity as it has in the past. He's in college, and he's basically the head of the ACF, so he has been doubly busy, not to limit. He's also a family man with kids, so I encourage you, if you want to get in contact with him, you want to get in touch with him, you want to support him, theacf.co. And dude, I'm looking at these pictures here from Monster Read. Dude, he, pardon my French, he kicked the desk's ass. The way he's being set up, and the pedals are just they're just the beauty on top.
I mean, so Bill was it, is that, that's who you're talking about? Was it OLF?
Yeah.
Oh man, I wonder if I met him. Yeah, Bill, hit me up and let me know if we talked and we were OLF.
I want to say him and Terry Philippe on Google Plus, they were always right next to one another. I believe they came from the same town to OLF.
Okay, well, man, if you're going to be there next year, man, we need to talk. But yeah, check him out on Google Plus for sure. Of course, check out the ACF.co. You can check me out on Google Plus. Hit me up there. That's probably the best way to contact me nowadays. Just Cody Cooper on Google Plus. Throw me your stuff for the Kids on Linux. Any questions for me? Anything you want to contribute to the show, that you can hit either of us up on Google Plus, or be sure to email it at our podcast at linuxfortherestofus.com. I thank you very much for listening. I still don't have a sign-off yet, guys. I'm just going to wing it. Linux rules, because we rule. Thanks, guys.